Podcast.
Are we saying podcast?
Welcome back to Fanboys and a Filthy Casual. Back at you once again. This is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
So we've been doing this little bit last couple of episodes. It turns out that you know, people kind of get bored of us when it's just like the same thing over and over again. So we're gonna like steal from other podcasts, and we decided, you know, we want to talk about news. We want to talk about things that is really on our minds. And as Harold said, he wants to get it off his chest. Yes. And because he went to the open yesterday, let's open Harold's chest.
Yes.
That's the new.
That was improvised. That's amazing.
We're keeping this. So Harold, let's start off. What is something that you want to get off your chest?
We'll do the first news thing, and then I got something else. Okay. But if you guys didn't hear, and obviously the three of us have heard, but they have done casting for the biopic for Hulk Hogan.
Oh yeah.
And oh yeah!
Oh yeah! That's like the one accent he can do, right? And of course,
Macho Man.
And then we've seen that the person that they've chosen to play Hulk Hogan is Chris Hemsworth.
I know. I'm
into that. To be honest with you, I'm into the Hemsworth.
I am sure you are.
But I don't know. You have somebody who you know for a fact that can bulk up and
right.
Oh, yeah. You know, at least get the same like build without, you know, sans the what do you call it? Steroids, I'm hoping.
I say sans the tan.
I thought you said sans the hair.
Yeah. I don't know if those golden locks are be holding on any longer, man.
It's gonna be interesting to see Chris Hemsworth with like a bald patch on his head. What I'm thinking is
will they go the full actual story of Hulk Hogan, where it's like, will they show, because I know Hogan had this big issue about never wanting to be seen bald, which is why he was always wearing, you know, the bandanas, much like myself, but not going bald, but, you know, and he's very particular about his character in general, where he's never shown, to be shown any signs of weakness.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
if I'm not mistaken, like the internet back then, he was infamous for like his WCW NWO role that he would almost never take a pin. Right?
Yeah.
So he would never look bad, and he would always be the winner, no matter what. I mean, I think the Goldberg versus Hogan one was like the one exception, but
yeah.
So you're right. Is Hulk Hogan himself like involved in the movie?
I heard he's like some kind of executive producer.
Okay.
And so the thing I've been thinking about is, do they address the issue that just came up recently where he was, you know, let go from the WWE because of the whole kind of racist comments he made?
Yeah.
I mean, do they avoid those kind of scandals?
Yeah. And not to mention, like, so besides the racist comments, wasn't he in trouble for some, you know, leaked videos of him and, you know, Bubba the Love Sponge's wife? And
Yeah.
Scandalous.
He sponged her.
Jeez. Atomic leg doctor. Yikes. So for me, I think for safety's sake, or for at least for Netflix's sake, they're probably going to cover like his early years probably, and then like maybe into his peak of the early or late 80s maybe. I don't know if they'll even cover 80s, or I'm sorry, 90s,
I don't know.
WCW.
I would go all the way to the Andre the Giant like lifting thing.
That
would just be the rise, and because, I mean, that was his, I wouldn't say that was his peak popularity, but that's when everybody was like, oh, crap, you know, I mean, I think that would be a great, you know, somebody building up from nothing, all of a sudden he's the top guy. I think that would be one way of doing the Netflix thing safely.
That's a good idea. WrestleMania 3, Andre getting slammed, that's a great idea. Yeah.
So I was thinking, let's play a real quick game, since I've opened up with this. We have Chris Hemsworth as Hulk Hogan. Can we do some fantasy casting real quick, just in case here? Let's say that they, you know, include the Andre the Giant thing. Who would be a great Andre the Giant?
Wow.
Well, the guy from Game of Thrones, isn't he? Any single time you meet somebody big, it's like, okay, that guy.
the mountain. I think his actual name is like Thorson or something like that. Thor Bjornsson.
What would the irony of Thor slamming Thor?
I know, that'd be great. Oh, man. Okay, for Andre, that's a good idea. Yeah, I go with the mountain too. That's a great call.
You can go with like angle, you know, like trick shots and everything, and you can get Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is always really tiny. Like, for some reason, he always looks like he's like.
They could do that force perspective thing. Like,
my gosh, dude. I just had a thought of like Tom Cruise as Jimmy Hart.
Ooh,
the mouth of this house.
He's so little.
He's so great. Exactly. Because Tom Cruise is all 5'6", and like full of energy, just running around the ring with a bullhorn, yelling. That'd be great. So that's my fan casting right there. Tom Cruise as Jimmy the Mouth of the South Heart.
I think, sadly, I think the Big Show would be perfect for that role.
You're right.
Under the Giant.
Ironically,
I don't know if that's really fantasy.
This is actuality.
let's get a big wrestler.
Okay.
A little on the nose.
who would make a great Ric Flair for the movie? I'm just going to give you a couple more and then we'll go.
Ric Flair. That's a good somebody charismatic, obviously.
I can't do it.
Oh. Stupid. even though you know all of his moves.
Wow. I am speechless. Aside from saying speechless.
You know, now I'm kind of stuck with, like, casting Avengers as wrestler. Because I kind of want to...
We can go that route.
I kind of want to see, for whatever reason, like, Mark Ruffalo goes in my head for Ric Flair. Just because, again, for his stature, and dude's got the curly hair, and it would be great to see him in, like, a blonde wig and just, like, strutting around and all that stuff. So I think Ruffalo would be my hot take. Because I think, for all of Ric Flair's like over dramatic stuff, like he's pretty nuanced. Like he's gone through a lot of stuff. Like he can go face, which is good guy, or heel, meaning bad guy. And you know, at the drop of a dime, I think Ruffalo's got the range to go from bad guy to good guy. Obviously,
I like that one. But I think if I were to choose, I'd go a little bit different. It's still, since we're talking Marvel and everything, I'd go with. Star-Lord.
Chris Pratt. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a real good one.
I think he has the charisma and like the crazy.
Yeah.
That he can actually pull that off. I think.
Okay, let's go with this theme. I'd actually go Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
They got the schnoz.
Oh.
They got similar schnozzes.
I know, and you actually get to see Bradley Cooper now instead of like Bradley as a raccoon in the movie.
An actual person, him. It's who would be... No, I was going to say. Macho Man.
Macho Man.
Because there needs to be a Macho Man.
Yeah, that would be a great like side-by-side story. You know what, for Macho Man... I think I'm gonna cheat a little bit because I saw some photoshops of it online floating around. But I'm gonna go with Chris Evans. Chris Evans, and because I think he's got the physique for it. And yeah, he can grow the beard. He's got
Chris Evans,
Captain America as Macho Man. But now I'm just thinking like, you know, Chris Evans in like tassels and like. Like a cowboy hat. That'd be great.
Hey, I'm all for that. If he doesn't have any future roles outside of Captain America,
yeah, like,
he's got a future.
I don't know. I'd go with Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
Just because he's going to be skinny as hell. but again, I'm going for like the big character, the big personality and everything.
Good call.
And we know that he can do a mustache and a beard. So.
But can he snap into a Slim Jim?
I got two more.
Even I can't snap into
it. I know.
Every time I try snapping into a Slim Jim, it'd be like...
Like, wait a minute, you're supposed to snap, David. Macho Man told me to snap.
Yeah. You can't snap into regular beef jerky.
No.
It takes too long.
Gonna pull a teeth.
A couple more, let me go. Roddy Piper.
Ooh, bad guy.
Because there is no Hulk Hogan without Roddy Piper.
Without Roddy Piper.
Well, if we're going to do that, I'm going to actually, and I think it's cheating, since we're all about inclusivity and everything, I'd go Ronda Rousey. Just because. On the nose. And, you know, but you have... you have the you know, you have the kind of the same physique.
Yeah.
Okay. And
give her the same bob that he
had. They both look good in the skirts.
Exactly. Right? Yes. I think Roddy more than her.
He had the legs for it.
For Roddy Piper, oh, that's a good question. I'm actually gonna go off. I'm sorry. I know we were talking about Avengers or Marvel, but you know what? I'd love to see. This is fantasy casting, but CM Punk.
Ooh,
cause dude,
yeah,
you know, right. Because dude, you know, he tried MMA. Didn't work out too well. I'm pretty sure he's not too busy nowadays. So I would love to see him. Like, yeah, because he was, you know, for all the CM Punk. What do you call it? Dubbed that whole term pipe bomb and the, you know, being hot on the mic, but you know, before him that was Ric Flair, I'm sorry, Roddy Piper's shtick. So you know, I'd love to see him in that role and just try to like verbally tear down Chris Hemsworth and just see how he can do and go from there.
And last one, Ultimate Warrior.
Dave Bautista.
Yeah, I was like, Dave,
get out of my head. I had that in my pocket too. That's great. You're right.
I can see him doing the out of breath like pumping.
Well, he already shaking when he was still wrestling. He was shaking the rope.
That's right.
Now he used to always be like, "Hey."
Now he's got to run from the entrance all the way to the ring.
I don't know about that. Big Dave's cardio was never.
They're gonna have to CGI that part.
They're gonna have to get everybody those old moving wrestling rings.
Yes.
They can get them down to the down ringside.
So yeah, looking forward to that one. I agree with Dennis. I think Batista would be a great Ultimate Warrior, physique wise, and like, yeah, I can't imagine there are a lot of dialogue for Ultimate Warrior. So Batista's perfect.
Just breathing really hard. Yeah.
Some snarling.
Oh no, there'd be some dialogue. We just wouldn't understand what he's saying. Yeah. From the mountains of coming crashing down.
Be perfect.
The sun has three moons.
It's like, what the?
Okay, anything else?
No, that's it for me.
I know this is supposed to be Harold's channel, but one more I wanted to kind of mention is that, a little sad news, we found out that Reggie, USA, is retiring. Thoughts, reactions, anything?
It's sad news, but it's welcome, because I'm glad that dude is retiring on, you know, more or less than a high note, because if I'm not mistaken, the Switch is doing really well this season, or this year. Selling a lot of units and all that good stuff. And like you mentioned, and when he took over from Nintendo, the DS was coming out, and I think the GameCube was still a thing. So I know that the GameCube of all of the Nintendo systems wasn't the most beloved. So, I mean, kudos to him for keeping Nintendo relevant. Excuse me. I know it's been a kind of a tough year. My stepson actually pointed out that the Iwata, who was the, I believe, the president of Nintendo Japan, passed away this last year, and then Reggie Fils-Aimé retires this year, so it'll be a new direction for Nintendo, period, for the next moving forward. So hopefully, you know, they stay relevant. I love their product, I love what they do. So yeah, kudos to him, and props for all that he did for the last few years. I still love my DS.
Speaking of your DS, Deus Ex.
Whoa. What's a Deus Ex?
I don't know, is that one pretty good movie with Oscar? Oh, no.
Oscar Isaac is there?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
In Deus Ex?
Uh huh.
Yeah, he's that guy.
He's the Deus in the X?
He wasn't the Machina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, a really great segue there, Harold. It was almost like we planned it. You know, today's topic is, you know, we were talking about it in our chat, and for some reason I really got into this idea of the Deus Ex Machina. You know, Lewis had this really cool article that he put on his on the website.
Yay.
Where it's like, you know, the noob, you know.
We call it the Dorkshinary. So it's a lot of terms that us fanboys use, and for the layperson, you can check it out and see what it is exactly that we're talking about. So yeah, that was one of the terms, Deus Ex.
Yeah. And so today we kind of wanted to talk about Deus Ex, because Deus Ex is, Ex Machina is one of the tropes that everybody kind of uses over and over and over again. And sometimes, you know, some people kind of refer to it as lazy writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Deus Ex Machina basically really is, you know, it's all, at least it seems like when a writer is able to write themselves to a corner where everything is just impossible, everything is, you know, there's no way they're going to win. All of a sudden, bam, something happens.
Yeah.
You know, and just to be nerdy about it, you know, this the whole idea of the Deus Ex Machina came from Greek, the Greek plays, where out of nowhere, they would actually have like a pulley system where they would have a statue of a god that would come in, and you know, that was where the whole idea is, and it's been something, whether it's movies, whether it's TVs, TV shows or books, everybody uses you know, Deus Ex Machina. So let's talk about it, you know, kind of go around, see what's your favorite Deus Ex Machina moment, whether it be a bad one, whether it be a good one, you know, who knows, we'll see.
Okay, I'm going to start off first, because this one, I'm going to pick on one of my favorite series, one of my favorite movies, actually, Lord of the Rings, specifically the last movie in the trilogy, Return of the King. Now, if you've seen the movie, I'm sure you have, it's made billions of dollars, and everybody's got the steel jacket Blu-rays at home, but the moment I'm talking about... Oh,
no, no, we don't. No, we don't.
Well, guess what you're getting for Christmas?
Everybody? Not everybody.
Okay. Two out of three.
Do you have one?
One out of three. Okay.
Never mind. I don't like those odds. Where's that Deus Ex now? But so at the end of the movie, we find that Frodo, our hero, and Sam, his lover, have thrown the... I'm sorry, that's my headcanon. Has thrown...
No. It is.
It's okay.
Is that your headcanon?
That is my headcanon. Yeah, check out my...
Put your headcanon somewhere else.
Check out my fanfic online. It's on Reddit. Anyway, so at the end of the movie... Frodo and Sam have thrown the One Ring into Mount Doom, where it is the only place that could destroy the ring. Now, at this point, Mount Doom is a volcano. It's erupting. Lava is flowing everywhere. Rocks are exploding all over the place. And, you know, the two heroes are beaten. They're bruised. They're done. The whole audience thinks, I mean, me as a layperson, I never read the books. I didn't know how it was going to end. So I was watching it with my family thinking, wow, this is how the series is going to end. They're going to pull a Terminator 2 and kill our heroes. And that's going to be fine because it's they kind of earned it. You had the moment. It was a wonderful movie, a wonderful series. But out of nowhere, now like how Dennis kind of explained that there used to be a literal hand that would come out and pick the heroes out. At the last moment, these gigantic eagles fly in, swoop the heroes out of danger, and fly them back home. Now, that, if for me, is one of the greatest pieces of Deus Ex ever, because it literally was a hand of, you know, of a higher power saving our heroes at the last minute when there's literally nowhere else to go. Now, I don't want to knock on one of, like, history or, you know, literature's greatest creators in Tolkien saying that, oh, dude, he got lazy and he, you know, where did the eagles come from? Now, I'm sure there's, like, people who have read the books or have studied the books more than I have that could say, no, the eagles were there, the eagles have been there, but as a movie watcher, I was like, wow, that kind of came out of nowhere, and it's kind of jarring, to be perfectly honest. I thought it was kind of a cop-out, because it's like, oh, if they died, it would have been a worthy death, you know, and then, you know, it would have given the other heroes of the rest of the Fellowship something to kind of mourn about, and just kind of like, you know, I felt like the whole theme of the movie, of the whole series, was that during war, or during battle, there are going to be losses, and I thought that would have been a great, like, it's kind of end note to say that yes, heroes happen, but unfortunately some of them pass away. But yeah, eagles at the end of the series. I think you go online, you'll find that that's what a lot of people complain about the movies. But yeah, Deus right didn't, there. Deus on wings.
Didn't Gandalf also use that? Like I think the second.
Yes, he actually.
First movie.
The first movie. First, yeah, the
when
first
he
movie.
He was trapped in like the tower or something.
Yeah,
and I don't know. Like he did a moth. Like
yeah, he talked to a moth, and the moth flew to the forest. Forest talked to somebody else, and then, you know, game of telephone. Eagle can't save him. So yeah, the precedent has been kind of set, but at that point too, it was kind of like I said, kind of jarring because at least for the first movie, it set up at least that Gandalf was talking to somebody, and they played telephone all the way to the eagles. But this one's like eagles out of nowhere. I'm like, oh, okay. So yeah, that's my Deus Ex.
My first example is actually a movie that we reviewed last year, and also we reviewed the book. And I believe that the Deus Ex moment in Ready Player One is the moment where the quarter appears.
Oh, the one-up, yeah.
The one-up appears. where it's, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to think about that for a second.
I just like it. I like using that example because it's a more recent one.
Oh, yeah.
And it was built into the book where that was actually one of the things that they did transfer over, you know. Getting the one-up quarter wasn't the same method that he got into the book, but it provided the same result in the fact that the whole... If you guys hadn't seen the movie yet, at the very end of the movie and at the end of the book, Parzival's about to do the very last challenge and complete the very last challenge, but they have... They use the bomb. They use the one bomb to destroy every player, every player character, every PC and every NPC in the area, and so they'd wipe out the whole scoreboard and they'd have to start all over again. But fortunately for Parzival, he happened to have the lucky one up quarter, mm-hmm. and he was able to restart at the very end, which is, you know, very. Very nice to have, and very convenient. So he didn't have to do all the challenges all over again. His name still appears at the top of the scoreboard, and he can proceed with the very last challenge, finishes it out, and then ends up winning the whole prize. So it's just something that when I remember reading it in the book the first time, I was like, you know, that's the way they did it was very clever. And then the way they do it in this one, the fact that, you know, since we read the book, we kind of see how that comes. But literally having to be saved because... A machine gave him a quarter.
Yeah.
It's pretty apropos to be called a Deus Ex moment.
It's funny that you actually use that. And I don't know which came first, this the book or my example, because it pretty much is the same idea. And so my first one is going to be Scott Pilgrim. You know, Scott Pilgrim is, you know, we kind of talked about it, but, you know, it's a video, there's a lot of video game references there, and when he finally destroys Chris Evans, he actually gets to have, like, a one-up, you know, it's just casually go, ooh, one-up,
yeah,
you know, and he takes it, you know, and then in the final clash, the finale, where everybody thinks, because it's set up where Scott Pilgrim finally learns the power of love, you know, he's going to win, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there's a sword through his heart.
Yes.
And he's like, and he's there, he's like, oh, I'm so lonely, you know, I'm dead, and then all of a sudden, that one-up happens, like, oh, really? Okay, you get to restart from the very, very beginning where it's appropriate, where you can actually, you know, fix everything, you know, everything that's happened.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's like, oh, okay, cool. I thought it was appropriate. I thought it was a great, it fit the movie. But, again, one of those things where it's like, oh, there's Ex Machina right there.
But then, you know, you gotta admit, at least in that context, because it is a video game based movie, it's very clever.
Yeah.
And the fact that, because, like, when we play video games and we die at a certain position, we're like, okay, what got us to that and how can we fix that? You know, basically,
every
problem solving thing, anyways. But then, you know, you can recognize exactly at the point where you're like, okay, this is where I made the mistake. This is what I need to do different. And then that's kind of how Scott does. And then he makes the mistake in not getting with both Ramona and Knives. Because, like, I don't know how you'd not get that vibe from the both of them. Because, you know, he could have knifed both of them.
Yeah. Well, which is, I guess, I don't know how you see it, because it's a little creepy, the age difference between Scott and Knives Chow there. But remember, there's that special ending... for the movie, at least, where he gets to you get to choose which one you go with,
either
Ramona or Knives. So you at least have both of those opportunities.
But he doesn't get both of them. Like, he's only 22, man. He should live it up.
Well, technically, he did get on with Ramona already. So.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
So if he goes with Knives,
I'm just saying,
this is Harold's
fan. Same time, man. Same time.
His head cannon.
Yeah, point that somewhere else. It's not on mine.
Yeah, both of your head cannons should not point at each other.
Yeah, yes. We should all point at each other like some kind of Mexican standoff.
What?
So I'm like Luis pointing at you.
No, no. I don't want you to explain. Luis, let's go with you, please.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to go with one of my favorite movies, Superman 2. For those who don't know, a quick recap. For Superman 2, we are introduced to General Zod, as well as his henchmen, Zor-El and somebody else. Lara, I'm sorry. But anyway, jumping to the end, we see that basically you have three...
Was it Lara-El? Is that what her name is?
I think so.
I thought it was
Ara-El.
Yeah. No, that would make her mom or his mom. Anyway, I can't remember their names right now, so I apologize. But anyway, General Zod, that's what you pay the money for, is to see Terrence Stamp, stamping it up as General Zod.
Which, by the way, time out real quick. Yes. I find funny that you make fun of me and Tony Shalhoub, where every single time Lewis does anything, it's always Superman.
He's my go-to, man. I'm sorry.
Because yours is so, obscure. Like, it's Tony Shalhoub. Like, a singular man. A singular man who's done several projects. But Lewis
Excuse
is like...
Excuse me. He had Men in Black. He had Galaxy Quest. And then he
did the Green
Exactly.
Thing.
I'm doing a Tony Shalhoub episode. I'm not even inviting you guys.
This is going to go live.
It's a surprise episode.
You're just going to see iTunes. What?
New episode. I don't remember recording.
22.5? What? I didn't know there was a 0.5.
Oh, wow.
Okay, sorry.
Go ahead.
Tony Shalhoub, go ahead. Tony Shalhoub is General Zod.
Imagine Tony Shalhoub going, kneel before Shalhoub. That's my headcanon.
Exactly. Dennis's article, I Shalhoub you.
Okay.
Shalhoub me? Give me a week. Know you.
Give me a week. That's coming out. I Shalhoub you.
So, I'm sorry, for my Deus Ex, for this example, for Superman 2. So, like I said, three fully powered Kryptonians against one Superman. In the end, Superman was able to depower them, but at the end, he couldn't figure out if he needed to kill these guys or get rid of them. But what he does is he pulls off his S shield on his chest and he throws it at the bad guys, and for whatever reason, it turns into the Phantom Zone. Now, for this example, I'm going to go ahead and say this is a bad example of Deus Ex, because there was no precedent set before this about any magical superpowers that his costume had or any abilities that he had to send them back to the Phantom Zone. The Phantom Zone being the jail where these three Kryptonian criminals were from before. So it was totally out of nowhere. It was a little very jarring, actually, at that point. And kind of a cop-out, super cop-out. Superman 2 infamously...
Wait, he said super cop-out.
Not to be confused, a super cop with Jackie McCann.
No cop-out with Tracy Morgan. Because that would be the greatest sequel we've ever seen. Tracy Morgan and Jackie Chan. Super cop-out.
From the makers of Rush Hour. We should write these down. Or just listen to this again. Yeah. When we go live. Anyway, that's my example.
I like the fact that you're talking about super cop-out there, because my next one is another super cop-out. Uh-huh. And it turned out Superman 2 is not the first time Superman uses an unusual power to save the day. And again, we talk about Deus Ex Machina. It's like when the writers just really run out of options. And I'm talking about Superman 1.
Mm-hmm.
Superman 1, where everything is already everything that he loved at the very end, everything that he loved, everything that was meaningful to him was gone already. And kind of like the Superman S-Shield, Superman decides to come up with
something. Hold on, real quick. I thought you said S-Shield.
That's the S-Shield.
That's the S-Shield, but he had S-Shield. And I was like, whoa, your accent came back.
I don't know if you know this. He's from the Philippines.
Sing! We haven't done that in a while.
We haven't done it in a few episodes.
We were due.
Okay. So the S-Shield... when it was thrown out, again, it's like a Superman power that everybody does. But for Superman 1, he not only does a power that he never had, but he destroys the whole idea of space-time continuum, which is kind of what we were, remember, originally I wanted to talk about this with the dumb time travel tropes and everything. But this, the fact that he's able to stop the world by turning the other way. Now, first and foremost, there's a couple of things that's going to happen. That sudden change is going to kind of destroy the Earth, which would, result in terrible things. But doesn't that just mean that he's the now the Earth is turning the other way? And how does that actually freaking
how does that change?
Don't think about it too much, man. Don't think about it too much,
he just goes around, and it's for some reason, not only that, but it's his father that kind of like comes out of nowhere and says, hey, buddy.
You know, hey, just go fast. Go fast the other way. I don't know why Marlon Brando became Ryan Danger.
No respect.
Hey, Superman.
No, 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 no.
Respect you. Go the other way.
Okay, that's me pissing on Marlon
Brando. Marlon Brando.
You know who'd be a great Jor-El? Tony Shalhoub.
You're gonna make a great Kal-El, Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub.
My next example is not Superman.
I'm sure
it could be.
Yeah, but any hot takes on Superman 3?
Because the sun all of a sudden wrote like kind of like appearing in order to.
To give him energy on the moon. Yeah,
that's true. I don't know. They were great as kids. That's one of those things that's like, maybe, yeah, Superman 2 was my favorite movie when I was a little kid, and now every time I watch it, it kind of cringes,
like, ooh.
You know, like, he throws saran wrap at three guys, and like, takes them off. My example is something, is an example from one of Dennis's favorite movies, that being the classic in my eyes, and a lot of other people's eyes, Toy Story 3, and the Deus Ex
it's
moment.
It's the Spider-Man coming of Pixar movies.
But for everybody else who has a heart, at the very end of Toy Story 3, we do have the moment where all of the characters who we've known for the past three movies are about to go into an incinerator. And it seems like all hope is lost, so, you know, they all start grabbing each other's arms, and then they're praying for, I guess a smooth death is what we're looking for.
Jeez.
And out of nowhere, a giant claw comes out and picks them all up. And it's, you know,
it's
literally a hand of God run by Martians. Because, you know, the little Martian characters who, for the whole thing, series, they've been, you know, imagining themselves being taken by the claw. So now the first time they get to use it. And the relief, I don't say the release, but the relief that, you know, that comes awash when you finally see that the characters are acting that survive is pretty great. What still makes me laugh about that moment, though, is how accurate the claw is that they were able to find small toys and grab all of them without any of them falling off. And kudos to the makers of the giant claw.
Which, by the way, the aliens are beings from heaven.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, so... So everything,
dang, you're right.
It's the most accurate.
I hate that movie now.
There's so many religious backstories.
I know.
Subtext.
It's not as on the tongue as like Man of Steel, but you know.
No. Jesus.
Why would you be... Never mind.
No one wants to be on the tongue of the Man of Steel.
Okay, so for me, speaking of last-minute saves, another one of the classic movies that I love, yet makes me wonder why did they pull that off. I'm going to go with Jurassic Park, the first movie.
Oh.
it was kind of a... While you're watching the movie, it doesn't seem like there's a problem with it, but when you take a step back, you got to wonder how is it that the T-Rex saved everybody at the last minute? Because
who arguably is the hero of all the movies,
right?
Oh,
yeah,
every movie.
He's in all the advertising. He's obviously he's the one who bails him out at the end, even at Jurassic World. But yeah, it's weird that during the whole movie, up until then, you know, the T-Rex is chasing Dr. Grant and the whole crew around the park. The tense ending when the raptors are chasing our heroes through the facility. You're wondering like, how are they going to get out of this? They have no guns. They have nowhere else to hide. They're in the atrium, wide open for these raptors to just chomp down on them. And then at the last minute, again, kind of like the claw, you see the T-Rex head just bite down on a raptor as soon as it's about to jump on one of the kids. And here comes the save. Everybody feels great. Everybody's clapping. But at the same time, you wonder, was it ever established that the T-Rex didn't like the raptors? Or, you know, is the T-Rex just like picky eaters? They don't, you know, if they had the choice between human and raptor, it's like, I'm going to eat the raptor. So I thought it was just kind of a weird, like, It was a weird thing, but at the same time, like you said, it kind of established it for the rest of the movies and the rest of the series that T-Rex is the hero. So
actually, the reason why they went for the raptors is because the humans were standing still.
Oh, was it really?
Decade movie?
They weren't moving.
I don't know.
Okay.
Here's my question, though.
I like that. No, I like the fact that it stopped you. You're like, I guess that makes perfect sense then.
Because Dr. Grant did say stay perfectly still, which still makes no sense to me. It's like, all right.
My question about that is, when did the T-Rex develop the skills of a ninja? In that he was able to enter a building without anybody hearing him, when the fact that he was like 100 yards away and he'd take a step and it ripple throughout the whole thing.
That's a good
but
point.
But he's like 5 feet away and nobody hears him coming. It's like, I just remember like maybe the 10th time I was watching and I was like, how did he come from?
He was just chilling, waiting for
whatever. Life finds a way.
I'm not dead.
This
is high five.
Harold just gave me the first high five on this podcast.
A year and a half into it.
I did it to Lou a couple times because, you know.
No, it's for me.
Oh, for you, for you.
Because I need positive affirmation.
Okay, so next one is Avatar. Is, you know, most people, I don't know, you were talking about classic. It made a ton of money.
You're right.
It's still one of the highest grossing.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, movies. But when people kind of talk, look back at Avatar and talk about it, usually has a negative connotation to it for some reason. You know, I mean, yes, the storyline is kind of generic and everything, and it is cultural appropriation at its best.
Yes.
But you know, I personally, it's one of the movies that every time it's on, I'm like, damn it, I gotta watch it. I want to see what happens with the Tree of Souls. You know, is it Rosario Dawson?
Michelle Rodriguez was
Michelle
the pilot.
Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Oh, like, who's Zoe Saldana?
Oh, Zoe Saldana. Yeah.
Is Zoe Saldana gonna save everything? You know, but I love that movie. And at least for me, the Deus Ex Machina for it is that, you know, when the Tree of Souls was about to get attacked, and all these
army
was everywhere. There's all these planes about to do the bombing run, and you have Zoe Saldana just there trapped, and she's basically said goodbye to Jake Sully already.
Sully,
And she's there. She's about to so that she can distract somebody. She's about to take her arrow and fire it, and all of a sudden you kind of you hear the Jurassic Park, like, you know, boom, boom, everybody's moving around, everybody's looking around going, what is that? And then out of nowhere, you know, all of these animals start coming in and start destroying everything, every creature from the air, from the land and everything, even though you know, Zoe Saldana's character kept on saying, you know, Ava doesn't interfere, Ava just watches all those things. And then out of nowhere, Zoe Saldana just going, Ava hurt us! Jake! Ava hurt us! And it's like, damn it. It's good. Because you know, the god of the planet just decided to send its beings out there to help everybody. So I love that movie, and I still think it's one of the best, I don't think it's too corny, best use of Deus Ex Machina for me.
I only have really one issue with that movie, and it's the fact that the item that they're going for is called unobtainium. Because that was in the first 10 minutes of the movie, and it threw me off for the rest of the movie, because I was like, can you really get it if it's unobtainium? So,
it's a little on the nose. What was the guy's name? I'm trying to look it up. What was the bad guy's name? Short dude. Ah, killing me. Sorry, guys.
Which, by the way, he would make a... he would make the perfect wrestler, also.
Giovanni Ribisi.
I thought you were talking about the general that he looked like.
Oh, the guy that looked like Cable.
I thought that's what you were talking about. Who's Giovanni
Ribisi? He's the guy.
The guy that says unobtainium.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's the owner of that thing.
Then I want him as Mean Gene. Because he's so sleazy.
that's his character for everything.
good tip.
My next one is you know, Dennis brought up Scott Pilgrim earlier, so I'm going to go in the Edgar Wright universe as well.
Okay.
And literally, still one of my favorite Deus Ex moments is the ending of Shaun of the Dead, where if you guys haven't seen Shaun of the Dead, you are...
What's wrong with you?
You are trash. or probably a little kid, because it's not appropriate for kids at all.
But I have never watched Shaun of the Dead.
You should.
I've never watched it from top to bottom.
Okay.
I got there the first. I missed the first like 10 minutes or something like that, and I watched throughout the whole thing. So
yeah, the first 10 minutes is just social commentary. Yeah, that's that's not it's not necessary to the plot, but it does create perfect ending at the very end.
Yeah, paints a picture. Yeah.
But so for anybody else who hasn't seen the end of Shaun of the Dead, we have Sean and Liz, the last two characters who survived with their group after everybody else has been decimated by the zombies. They're trapped in the basement of a bar of the Winchester, and it looks like there's nowhere else for them to go because they're surrounded by the rest of the zombies. They happen to find an escape route, and they just hit the escape to get up into the surface, and while they're on the surface, they realize that there's nothing but zombies surrounding them, so they figure out, they figure that this is probably the end, and this is where everything is going to go down, and out of nowhere, a bunch of blasts from, just assault rifles come out, because the army has just
rolled
in. It just happened to be right in front of the Winchester and taking out everybody in front of them, and it's probably one of the most relieving things, just because, Sean and Liz are great, such great characters that, you do really want them to survive. And then, because everybody else, passes away. And then you have that great moment. And then later on, you see that they were able to survive thanks to another group that they had run into saying, that there's people over here. This is where we need to be. So it's just a great moment in that literally out of nowhere, they just... It's just a really bad cut that Edgar Wright did on purpose, where it's just like, and then you see all these zombies just start dropping, and it's great.
We're kind of running out of time here. I think let's do a little speed round.
Sure.
Kind of talk about the movie and do a quick recap of what it is that that happened. For me, and it's arguable whether or not it's a Deus Ex Machina, I'm going with Guardians of the Galaxy. Where at the very end, and again, it's one of those things where everybody's down. All the main characters are already on the floor, and he's not Drax the Destroyer. What's his name? The guy with the hammer.
Thor.
No, I hate you.
Ronan.
Ronan. There you go. Ronan is about to destroy the world, and out of nowhere, you see Star-Lord start singing. Ooh, child. And he starts going, it's a dance-off, bro. And it's such a stupid moment where it's like, why did Ronan not just go, and the whole thing? But it was enough to distract him and for them to be able to win when the whole thing was unwinnable. So that would be one of mine.
Yeah, big deus, because who knew the power of friendship could stop Infinity Stone?
Yeah.
For me,
power holding hands.
Yeah, power holding hands.
Well, that in the end, at the end, they were like, oh, yeah, there's something special
about it. Turns out you're not all human. It's like, what?
Wait. Oh, okay, cool. All right. That whole ending is.
We'll explain it in the sequel. Don't worry, guys. For me, it's gonna my last deus is in the form of a MacBook. Independence Day, when our hero was able to take down an entire alien fleet with a virus. Like, wow! All right, a 1994 MacBook with a whatever virus that guy was able to come up with was able to take down an entire fleet that easily annihilated world armies overnight. But yeah, let's go with that. Sure. Okay.
My favorite thing about that is that, I've been to Lewis's house once and I needed to charge my iPhone and he had a Samsung charger. I'm like, damn it. I think they need one of those how it should end in videos where he's there going, oh, I have a PC connection.
They're like, I have a MacBook. Damn it, the PC. The plan's going to hell. Sorry, Will Smith.
We came all this way.
I know.
We didn't know what configuration it was.
No old lady singing tonight.
Fat lady.
Fat lady.
don't insult the old people.
Old people are allowed to sing everywhere. My last one is literally one of my favorite Deus Ex moments ever, and that's the ending of Dodgeball.
Yes.
Where we have, you know, the rules of Dodgeball, where Ben Stiller just happens to cross the line, yes, and he has to have a whole panel decide whether or not that, you know, if he broke the rules or not, and then they go through all the judges, and at the very end, the last judge just happens to be the deus of all deuses, which is Chuck Norris.
Thank you, Chuck Norris.
Thank you, Chuck Norris.
Believe you, Chuck Norris.
And at the very end, of course, they have my favorite one of my favorite moments of all time, where there's a treasure chest that Steve the Pirate wins, and literally on the front of the treasure chest it says Deus Ex Machina.
Which arguably, I think that chest was even better Deus Ex Machina than the Chuck Norris one, because
it did end up saving
and it's just them talking about, oh, by the way, I bet all the money there, knowing that it's going to end, it's exactly the amount of money that I can buy your company. Ha ha, we win.
And now you're fat again.
it wraps up everything. Therefore, Deus Ex Machina.
What a movie with multiple. We did a lot of Dodgeball adventures. I think it's too classic.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking of editing that, but we're... That was Lewis going...
That's all, folks.
Okay, that's it for us today. Thanks for listening. As usual, take a look at our website, twofanboys1casual.com. We are slowly but surely getting back on the writing game, and we are going to have a new episode or a new article next week called... I shall lube you. Or I'm shalloving it.
I've been shalloob with you. On Facebook, find us on Two Fanboys and A Filthy Casual. Every time an episode goes live, or if we post an article, we'll find it there. All the news, too, like the Regifil AIM news and the Chris Hemsworth as Hulk Hogan news, we posted there, too. So follow us on Facebook.
As Hulk Hogan? That's what you're doing. I thought you said bleep hole.
Oh!
Bleep hole. Like, whoa!
Way to go, accent. But as Hulk.
As Hulk. This is such as Hulk.
There's a Freudian slip right there. Shows you what I really think about you, Hulk Hogan.
And we got other stuff, too.
Way to go.
Just look for Two Fanboys, One Casual everywhere.
Yeah, that's what we got to do.
Then that's where we're going to be.
Stop blowing up our phones and their notifications.
So that's it for us today. Thanks for listening. As usual, this is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
I'm Shalubi.